Professor Tetz, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you, Vahim.
Professor Tetz, the latest volume in the Genocide Perspectives series will be launched in a few days. But before talking about the latest edition, could you give information about the Genocide Perspectives series, when started and why?
In 1993, I founded the Center for Comparative Genocide Studies at Macquarie University, and it lasted from 93 to 99, and then we moved away from Macquarie. But the very first publication that we started was Genocide Perspectives 1, which was in 1997. And it's really not a journal in the regular sense that you get one every month, or you get three a year or whatever. So we've actually staged them about 3 years apart. They're very serious essays, in-depth essays. The first volume covered issues like East Timor, the Armenian genocide, the Hellenic Greek genocide, the Holocaust, and so on. And most of the writers at that time, this is an interesting part of this discussion, were overseas writers, very few Australian scholars. And now we've reached the stage when we're up to number five, and number six, by the way, will appear again shortly. Number five is totally Australian authorship, and that pleases me very much, that in the space of something like 20 years, we've moved from virtually no genocide scholars in Australia, or just less than a handful, today to 30 or 40 major writers who are publishing worldwide. So that's a very pleasing aspect.
What major topics are covered in the latest edition?
So we've got Justice Michael Kirby talking about his investigations in North Korea and whether that was a genocide or not when he examined human rights there. We've got some very interesting essays on Nazi Germany, one on the experiments on children, the and sterilization programs. And we've also got a very interesting new piece of archival information by Conrad Queet and George Weiss, who discovered the archives of a doctor who performed medical experiments on Australian prisoners of war, which is a first. We've got essays on Indonesia. We've got a very good piece by Jennifer Ballant on why Australia is so reluctant to pursue charges of genocide and the Aboriginal on the issue of the Aboriginal treatment. I've got an essay of my 30 years of experience on teaching about genocide and how you might do that. We've got a very interesting piece by John Maynard, who's an Aboriginal professor in Newcastle, about the genocide that his grandfather, Frank Maynard, was writing about in the 1920s. So it's a very wide-ranging edition, and I think a particularly good one.
About your essay in teaching about genocide, how important is genocide education in schools and taking into account the Australian education system? Is it possible to include genocide studies in the Australian curriculum?
Yeah, there's an interesting point, Baha, that you raise about this, and it's a very good public issue, and it should be discussed more and more by ethnic communities that were victims. In the new national curriculum, the syllabus at, I think, year 10, makes it mandatory to teach something about the Holocaust. And while there's some reference to genocide generally, that has actually not specifically been made compulsory. And an argument has ensued, and listeners may be well aware of an issue we had with the New South Wales Board of Education, where one of the now retired employees who was very much involved with Turkish nationalism insisted that while she was a school inspector, she was not going to allow any of her history teachers to teach about the Armenian genocide or what happened to the Assyrian Christians and so on and so forth, because she denied that the Turks had ever done anything wrong. So, you know, that has been a sort of like a public argument and dispute, but that lady has now disappeared from the Board of Education, and I think as it stands now, it is optional, purely optional for teachers in high schools for years 10, 11, and 12 to teach about other genocides. In other words, there's a hint in the syllabus that other genocides can be taught, but they don't have to be taught.
How important is to advance genocide studies, and what are the major components of genocide studies programs?
Well, what is so important about this, the whole world is talking about human rights. Australia has just been given a seat on the UN Human Rights Council. We boast as an Australian nation about having a clean record on human rights, which we know is patently not true. So if we're going to tackle the issue of human rights, there cannot be a better example of the traducing and the disregard of human rights when it comes to genocide. Genocide becomes a focus for a great many things. You can teach to talk to kids about philosophy, about sociology, about geography, about history, about language, about culture, about anthropology, about biology. Every subject you any child studies at school can be shown to have a focus on genocide, or genocide gives a focus on all of those subjects. So to get an all-round education and to integrate that knowledge, genocide is actually sort of a tailor-made for students to get a grasp of what human rights are all about.
The book Genocide Perspectives, the latest edition, will be launched on Thursday, and Jeffrey Robertson will launch the book?
Yes, actually, it's very interesting. The evening is at the Sydney Jewish Museum, and we're very lucky. We've got two very high-powered lawyers, Mark Tedeschi, who's the chief prosecutor, who's written a book on the Myall Creek Massacre of 1838, Massacre of Aborigines by farmers up in northern New South Wales. And he's actually giving a talk on that book. And then there's a panel discussion about the contents of the book, which turns out to be a tribute volume to me, which is very pleasing, but I didn't know about that until very recently. And then Jeffrey Robertson, the QC, who most listeners will know from television, the hypotheticals and other programs, a very articulate, very intelligent, very bright man, who wrote a very good book, by the way, on the inconvenient truth about the Armenian genocide, where he undertook a brief to examine all the legal documents relating to the Armenian genocide, which he did extremely well. So he's actually launching the book.
The latest series of Genocide Perspectives is dedicated to you in recognition to your pioneering efforts in genocide studies. Why did you get interested in this topic? For personal human rights or other reasons?
Sort of a personal reasons. You know, I was teaching at the University of New England, and I used to teach courses on comparative race politics and race relations, and I was teaching about everybody else's victimization except the Jews, and I am Jewish. And eventually I started looking into that, and when it came to the Holocaust, the material was so upsetting and so distressing that I just couldn't face it. And in 1986, I went to Jerusalem, and I studied at Yad Vashem, which is the Israeli Holocaust Authority, the research authority. I did a course there, and it converted me instantly, and I came back and I started teaching courses called Holocaust and Genocide from 1987 onwards at Macquarie. And the reason for that is a lot of people sort of tend to present the Holocaust as a one-off, you know, sort of almost as an extraterrestrial event that's got no antecedent history and no aftermath history. And of course it has. And when I got to Yad Vashem, I realized from the great Professor Yehuda Bauer, who started off the lectures by saying, you realize that the Holocaust is a genocide. Genocide has been around since, you know, since antiquity, or since biblical days. Even in Genesis, there is talk of genocide. So I began to take an interest in the history of that phenomenon. And in 2015, my colleague Winton Higgins and I wrote a book called The Magnitude of Genocide, which covers the history of genocide from antiquity right through to the present time. So you can't teach the Holocaust without teaching genocide. You can't teach genocide without teaching the Holocaust. The two are Siamese twins. You just have to accept that they're one and the same phenomenon.
Are you descendant of survivors of the Holocaust?
No, in a sense, yes. My grandparents came from Lithuania. around about 1900 to South Africa. And I can remember during the war years, because I was old enough or young enough to have been around in 1940, 41, 42. And I used to translate for my grandmother the news from the BBC, and I'd mention that the Nazis had arrived in a certain town in Lithuania or in Poland, and she'd burst into tears and say, "Our family is gone." And, you know, I was 8 or 9 at the time. And how does a kid of 8 or 9 understand the concept of the word gone? It took me a little while longer to realize what gone meant. And in that sense, although we didn't lose, I didn't know that family, I'm quite sure that a whole lot of cousins and relatives, you know, disappeared in that period. But I don't call myself a survivor. I think the word survivor belongs specifically to people who were rounded up, taken, put into camps of various kinds, and who survived that experience.
In July this year in Brisbane, the International Association of Genocide Scholars held their conference, and the conference theme was justice and the prevention of genocide. Is it possible to prevent a genocide from happening?
No, no. You know, I get very angry with my colleagues who are involved in this. There are a number of journals called Genocide Studies Prevention, and everybody talks about prevention. You know, you can intercede, you can intervene in a genocide, and one of the best examples was during the Saddam's regime when the Americans and the British and NATO said, "We'll create a no-fly zone, and if you fly aeroplanes in this particular airspace dropping chemical bombs on Kurds, we'll shoot your planes down." And that was an intervention or an interceding to stop a genocide once it has started. But the notion of prevention, like looking at the analogy of measles or smallpox, that somehow you can give a nation an inoculation or a vaccination and say, no, we're going to prevent Myanmar from doing what they're doing to, you know, the Muslim people in that particular area. No, you can't prevent. Prevent is a very pretentious word. It suggests that you know exactly how it's caused, what it is. And we can say today, you know, people have a preventive injection against poliomyelitis. Yes, we understand polio. We know exactly how it works. But with genocide, we don't know exactly how it works, what sets it off, what is the trigger mechanism. You can look at a number of case studies and say, look, these people look very much at risk. We look at their previous history. We look at the conditions they're living under. We look at the dictatorship that's ruling over them. You can say, yeah, we can expect that something is about to happen to, say, Chechens under the Russians. But prevent? No. The world has not yet reached the stage where it's prepared to step in, as we see with the Rohingyas. Who's stepping in? Who's moving one muscle to stop what's going on with that kind of ethnic cleansing? So I'm not a fan of the word prevention. Nor do I believe that a lot of the prevention agencies, people who talk about prevention and creating prevention strategies, is going to amount to anything. It's a bit pessimistic, I know, but I think that's the reality.
Canada announced that we'll compensate their stolen generation. Is it time for Australia to do the same?
Yes. You know, Australia is about 30 to 50 years behind Canada in many things, including their treatment of native peoples. Canada's just given $770 million in compensation, or set up a fund to that value, to deal with the people who were taken away from their children and removed for 12 years and put into compulsory boarding schools. In Australia, we have had a brief 2 month period in which Aborigines could make some claims in Western Australia. The New South Wales government has announced that it had set aside $72 million for some compensation claims for the stolen generations. Tasmania, in fact, was the first state to agree to reparations, giving families something like, on average, $40,000 or $50,000 for a family. Now, the federal government, even following Kevin Rudd's famous apology speech in 2008, said, of course, there will be no reparations. The money could be better spent elsewhere. Nobody defines elsewhere. Nobody defines where such monies might go to. So Australia is very much lagging behind other countries around the world in the matter of reparations for genocide.
Professor Tatz, thank you for the interview. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Farah. Thank you for having me.